For now, I've got a lovely lady sitting in front of me. She is no stranger to the daytime break because she was here a couple of weeks ago, last month sometime. And we were so limited with time, I only got to just hear a little bit of her story. And I thought, hi, Mantumi, there's more. You owe me. You owe me. She's an author. And she's just an absolutely incredible human. Her name is Dumi Kutumela, and she's the author of My Father's Daughter. Dumi, welcome to the show. Welcome back, rather. That's what I should be saying.
Thank you for having me back, Sinclair. It's really, really amazing to be back with you guys today.
You look beautiful, I have to say. I love the black dress, the gold belts. Listen, you came ready.
I thought you asked me to be ready for you, so I had to make sure I'm ready mentally, emotionally, physically, all of it.
And otherwise, yeah. Dumi, listen, you know, this feature on the show that we have on a Thursday called This Is My Story, one of my favorites, because we get to hear about the love of God, the power of God, the grace of God, even through challenging times in our lives. Because, you know, sometimes I think when we think of the Lord and we think of life, we always just want the nice things, the easy things, where it's just smooth sailing. But the reality of the world that we live in is that challenging things will happen. They do happen to all of us. But there's always, like Charlene was saying earlier on, beauty after the storm. And I think your story is literally just one that really, you know, amplifies that message. Let's start for the sake of those that might have missed our previous conversation, just give me a summarized version of your story.
Zinclair, I want to jump on what you just said as I give you the summary. Sometime during the week, I came across this text that said, the weapons were never promised not to be there.
Yeah.
You were promised to conquer. Mm. Meaning no matter what happens, you've already conquered. You're already saved. And I want to, you know, jump on that to start off our discussion today, to say that is exactly what life happened for me. You can imagine a young girl at the age of 17, just passed her matric, excited about life and what life has to offer. And that weapon for me became falling victim of gang rape. And, you know, as we commemorate 16 days of activism, I find it so befitting that we are having this conversation today, you know, just to remind others out there that, you know, there is a rise after that fall. And I recall the day it all happened, we were really in celebration mode. We were between celebrating my matric results, celebrating my brother's 21st birthday as well. So you can imagine the dual celebration, how everybody at home is in good spirits and in celebratory mode, only for me to get kidnapped later that day and be left in some dark alley somewhere after being raped, and having to find my way back home after that. Mm. I always look at that day as the day that I think a part of me died, and for a very long time a part of me was buried right there. We look at how a lot of people don't even make it home after an ordeal like that. And when I look at my story and I see how at the end of the night, yes, I may have arrived home having been victimized, having been abused, having been raped. I may have arrived home without my shoes on, you know, with my life having changed instantly. But I made it home after it all.
Mm. And, you know, I think, so you explained the story so well the last time we had this conversation, Dumi, and my heart was broken, really. I'm thinking at the age of 17, you know, and at any age for that matter, to have to go through that must have been difficult. And I remember what you were mentioning about, you know, having to deal with the pain that you had gone through, but also trying to protect your family who's hurting probably just as much, you know, and there's anger, there's resentment. They want revenge, maybe even, or justice, you know. And I said, from that to Utumi now, that where we see now beauty from ashes, what was that journey like? I think I need you to take us from that time, soon after that happened, at the age of 17, your journey and what it entails to you getting where we are. Because a lot of the time when hard things happen to us, we don't see beyond. Mm-mm. We never ever see beyond that. We think there's no hope. And sometimes it's not what happened that destroys or kills a lot of people or causes them to give up. It's just the idea of, it's over for me. There is no hope beyond this. Take us through that journey from the ordeal to Utumi now, an author even, a powerhouse.
Sure. Zintle, I remember after after the rape happened and those guys left me there, and I needed to find my way back home. I think for me that's where the whole thing started, where for me the first thing that came into mind was, get back home, because everyone is looking for you.
Yeah.
There's no way they are not wondering where you are.
Yeah.
But I didn't even know where I was. So it was, you are going to find your way home in this very dark night where nothing makes sense, and you just need to make it home. And I remember running, and even running in the, so I went from like this gravel road running all the way to the tar main road, running, hoping that eventually I'll find something that looks common, that will say this is the direction that you need to take to go home.
Yeah.
And while trying to figure that out, a car drives past, and that very same car reverses. And I remember when they turned back, my fear to say, oh my gosh, it can't be happening again. You know, I really cannot be going through the very same thing over again after it had just happened. And it was these two main strangers to me. And it felt like, what, we're going back to another set of men, you know, and what's about to happen. And they kept trying to pace me down, saying what they are seeing is not common.
Yeah.
That you have a young girl at this time of the night running in the middle of the road, where there are not even like houses nearby or anything of the sort. You are barefoot, like nothing about it makes sense.
Yeah.
Can we help you? And I thought to myself, there's no way they are here to help me. Because how?
It's the same type of people that
exactly,
just hurt me.
Right? And I thought, keep running. And I continued with the running because in my head I was just like, I just need to get home. That was my thing. I just need to get home. And eventually they were like, look, okay, take the phone, call somebody something. You know, we just really honestly want to help. And to this day, I really don't know what said to me, jump into that car.
Mm.
But I got into their car and I said to them, I'll direct you guys to where I need to go. I told them which direction we needed to go, where we were headed. And then they drove, and they literally drove me home.
Mm.
And I remember arriving at home and the scene that I got when I arrived. I see my mother is talking on the phone frantically. I'm seeing my sister with her head between her knees and my cousin just holding her. And, you know, there's like other people all around. People are on their phones. People are just like
panicking. Panicking, yes.
Massive panic. You can imagine, we were just in party mode. Party had to stop right now because, you know,
someone disappeared.
Yeah. So there is quite a lot of people as well that are there. And the first thing I thought to myself was, I can't get out of this car. I don't even know what I'm going to say when I get out.
Did you have a sense of like self-blame even?
No. No.
What were you feeling?
At that point, I really just felt like my parents needed to get my body in whatever state it was in.
Mm.
That's all I was thinking about. And I remember pointing at my mother and saying to the guy who was sitting in the passenger seat that that's my mother. Tell her I'm okay, and that I just want to go into the house and sleep.
Sure.
That was the instruction I gave.
Mm.
And then he said okay, and then he went, and then my mother came to the car and she took me out of the car, and my instruction went out the window because she was just like, you are not going into the house.
Obviously, like, where have you been?
Like, you know, yeah. It's not how it's going to work. We need to get you to, you know, to the doctor. We need to, you know, just make sure that you're okay and all of this. She's calling my dad to let him know that I'm home and whoever else has driven out to go look for me. So everybody's just getting all these calls. But I'm like literally seeing all of this and I'm seeing how everybody is just like not okay.
Yeah.
And I realized at that point, the only way they're going to be okay is if I'm okay.
Mm.
I didn't know how to make sure I'm okay. And I thought, let's play pretense. Make everybody believe that we are okay.
Yeah.
And then let's run with it. So from that very second, they said, will you be able to go to the police station? Let's go open a case. And I was like, okay. Everything was just like, okay. I went through that process of, you know, going to open a case, going for the medical checks, even the counseling session after that, because they moved me from the police station to the doctor. From the doctor, they assigned like a therapist to talk to me and everything. And even with him, I felt I needed to give him the, I'm fine. Everything's okay.
Yeah.
I just need to get home and sleep.
Yeah.
Because I believed that's all that needed to happen. I needed to just get home into my room, into a place that felt safe.
A lot of the time, people say time heals, for example, yeah. you know, or there's a lot of things that people say, give it time, you'll be okay over time, or do this or do that. What would you attribute your healing to? What would you say healed Udumi? Because you're sitting in front of me right now. You're able to talk about this. I'm probably the one who wants to cry more than you do. You've written a whole book. You're living life to the fullest. You're clearly a healed person. But what would you attribute your healing to?
Definitely not time. on the contrary, I don't think time helped me in any way, because from that day, it took me 10 years to get to a point where I was like, I'm ready to deal and accept what happened.
Ten years of denial.
10 years.
Avoiding.
Yeah.
Sure.
Not acknowledging it. Yeah. I knew it happened, but I was not talking about it. I was refusing to even, you know, give it a second of thought, because I felt like if I do that, I'm then saying to everybody else, that girl who said she was okay is not. So we needed to keep this up. And in keeping it up, my life went on. I, like, you know, went to school, got a job, got married, had kids. Like, life went on. Mm. Like, you know, it was normal. When you looked at everything that was happening around me and how it was happening, life was pretty much normal.
Yeah.
You know? But I was dying inside, because one thing that does not go away with such things is, if you're not going to deal with the trauma, it's going to haunt you. The triggers are there. So sometimes I go home and then a car drives past me at the same spot where I was taken, and I'm already jumpy.
Yeah.
You know, I remember the one day when I even ran home because a car stopped. It was at a stop sign. It had to stop.
Sure.
But I ran, because to me, it was about to happen again. But I didn't just run. I was running screaming for help. So it was things like that that said, girl, something
needs to deal with.
Yeah,
it.
We need to get to that point, you know. And I remember having so much resentment, but the resentment was towards God.
Yeah.
Throughout that 10 years. Because I was like, what kind of a father are you to go and allow something like this to happen to me? You know, so it was all of these things that were happening, and I really, it just really didn't make sense. So I believed that I was going to be the only person that would heal me. So I took things into my own hands. And it didn't work. I recall the day when I really seeked help.
Yeah.
Was when you say 10 years, I'm talking a proper 10 years.
Yeah.
I get involved in a car accident that lands me in ICU. And I'm in ICU with a collapsed lung, fractured jaw, many other injuries, scratches and all.
Yeah.
And I'm breathing through machines because, I mean, my lungs were not necessarily functioning well at the time. And I was thinking to myself, why are you still keeping me, God? Tell me. Why am I still here? Even in this pain that I'm in right now. I'm relying on machines to breathe. Why? Why don't you just take me? Why don't we just put an end to all of this? Because it has gone on for so long. Because I lived in the fear, right? Many may not have seen it, but I lived in it. And it got to that point where I was like, something needs to give.
Yeah.
And I mentioned this even in the last conversation we had, that I started having these conversations with, you know, the nurse that was taking care of me. And look, that man had so much patience. I don't know where he got it from. And, you know, he would remind me that I needed to breathe. In my head, I'm just like, yeah, but it's the machines that are making me breathe. I don't know.
Leave me alone.
Yeah, like, how's this supposed to work? You know, but he kept saying to me, you need to breathe. You need to breathe. And And he kept saying, only the living can feel.
Sure.
At that moment, those words didn't make sense to me. But I think a couple of days later, it kept ringing in my head, only the living can feel. The fact that you are still feeling all this pain, all this hurt, all this fear, all of this means you are still living. And at that point, I knew I needed to make a decision of whether I was going to continue to live a life of fear, of resentment, of anger, of shame, and all of that, or if it needed to change. Now, I didn't know how to change it myself. I didn't know how to do it on my own. I had tried for 10 years and I failed, dismally so. Because here I was, having built this, well, that the Tumi that was lying in that ICU bed, and I didn't know what we were going to do. And on that day, I went back to the Maker and I was like, God, I need you.
I need you.
Yeah.
And that's where everything started to change. That's where
everything started to change.
Woo! Only the living can feel. So you've written your story and even more detail about your journey, because I mean, the time that we've had now, we can never talk about everything in a book. Your favorite chapter in the book, it's called My Father's Daughter.
Yes.
In just a few minutes, you know, what do you desire that this book does to the person that reads it? Why did you find it important to tell your story, you know, in the book, and what can people expect when they buy one?
I refer to My Father's Daughter as my gift to the world, a gift of healing, a gift of transformation, and a gift of hope.
Yeah.
When I wrote the book, it was never intended to be a book to be published. It was my therapy. It was me having to let out every single thing that I was feeling, and the only way I knew how to was through pen and paper. So I did that. And this is the second edition of the book. The first edition was really just me offloading it all.
Yeah.
You know, and in the second book, I started listening at people and their responses. And I thought, that healing, that transformation, people are yearning for it.
Yes.
So I said, let's take this book and turn it into a coaching tool.
Yeah.
To help somebody who's going through something.
Yeah.
It may not be rape like it was for me.
Yeah.
For you could be losing a parent. For somebody else, it could be, you know, moving from I'm the greatest athlete to breaking a leg and not being able to continue. It doesn't matter what that turnaround point for you is. But let it give you enough tools to be able to pick you up again.
I love that. And thank you for that, Tumi, because that's what we always need. I think that's one of the things that people need when they are going through that difficulty. Just that constant reminder to say, there is hope. There is a light at the end. There is life after this. The fact that you're feeling the hurt is testament that you're still living. And the fact that you're still living says there's still something for you in this world. Oh, God is not done with you yet. Where do people reach you? Where do they buy the book? How do... Ah, man, I love the cover. It actually, it looks beautiful. It looks beautiful. I can't wait to dig into it. Can you just give us details for those that might want to purchase it to help somebody that's recovering through something, to just restore that hope again? Where do they find the book?
The book is available at Exclusive Books.
Yeah.
You can also find it at Bargain Books.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, you can find it also on online stores if you check and you also check Zamaputi Publishers, you'll be able to find the book at all of those platforms. You can also get it directly from me.
Yeah.
yeah, but getting a lot of, can I have the signed copy? I'm like, yeah, you're not going to find it at Exclusive Books. But yes.
Come to me.
Come to me. You can definitely get a copy from me as well. You can email me at dumigudumela@gmail.com. Or you can... ping me on socials, Tumi Kutumela, on X, on Threads, Instagram, TikTok, as well as Facebook.
Thank you, Tumi, for being amazing. Thank you for allowing God to heal you. I think, you know, one of the biggest takeaways for me from this conversation is It's important for us to surrender our pain to God. Mm. It's important because that 10-year, you know, I think the sooner you could have given it to the Lord and said, Lord, I'm not okay. The earlier, you know, you could have healed. I've got a quick message on the WhatsApp line from Anonymous. They're saying, Tumi, I love you very much, sweetheart. You're perfect. You're beautiful and a brave lady. I've been living with HIV for the past 16 years. Thanks to my late husband who subsequently died within a year of our marriage. I accepted what happened on his deathbed, but healing is an everyday journey. There are triggers and things that remind me, like having to take medication on a daily basis, but my Lord kept me alive and strong for the past 16 years. Thank you for sharing. I can totally relate to your story. Amazing.
Beautiful.
Amazing, amazing. And someone else saying, listening to Tumi puts a smile on my face because I went through mostly what I went through, or maybe what you went through as well, Tumi. And she says, thank you, Tumi. God is good. This one coming through from Tsepi. Thank you for your wonderful messages. And Tumi, thank you for your time. And thank you for your positivity. You are so beautiful, not just like by looking at you, but you've got just such a beautiful thing about you. You are strong. You look, for me, as I look at you, I keep just seeing whole. You are whole. Do you know what I'm saying? And it really has been a pleasure chatting to you. I believe and I know for a fact your book will be an encouragement to a lot of people that are going through traumatic experiences. And you live to tell the story. We thank God for your life and for the many lives you will touch through this book. Thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you so much, Sinclair. And thank you to all the listeners.